I'm Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. We've been talking today about the police and police relations with the communities they patrol in the wake of two high-profile shootings of African Americans this week. Well, imagine if heavily armed police patrolled your neighborhood round the clock. You saw them on the way to the store, on your way home from work. That's what it's like in some poor neighborhoods in El Salvador's capital. The Salvadoran police and security forces have been out in force in recent months to crack down on gang violence. But in one suburb, Soyapango, the heightened police presence has many residents on edge.
They're more afraid of the police and the soldiers because, as one of them put it, at least the criminals go to jail and we don't see them anymore. But the police and the soldiers don't. They're never sent away for the bad things that they do here.
That's Salvadoran American Susan Cruz. She helps youth in trouble with the law in El Salvador and the U.S. Cruz spent a day with some young women in Soyapango last month and listened to their concerns.
One young woman named Gloria told me about a young man in her block who was walking down the street, and the police stopped him and they searched him as they always do. But this time they took some money from his pocket and they took his cell phone. So he went to the local police station to file a complaint because he wanted his cell phone back and he wanted his money. The police took him to the back. They beat him up, hit him in the head to the point that he was almost knocked unconscious. And they took photographs of him and they told him that if he followed through with the complaint, that they knew where to find him.
As we've seen in St. Paul and Baton Rouge, bystanders videoed on their cell phones what was happening with those cases of police abuse. Is that even in the realm of possibility for these teenagers in Soyapango?
I asked that question. How likely are you to use a cell phone and take video of these abuses? And they said, oh, we can't do that here because the police will come up to us, take our cell phones, literally snatch them from our hands and look through them. And we can't say anything about it because then they'll just walk away with their phones and they will use our pictures. They will use our information that's on our cell phones against us. It's not like we feel safe taking video of the police because who are we going to give it to?
Is it just a few bad apples, or are there some police, a lot of police, who are protecting people in Soyapango from the gangs?
There are police officers stationed in other neighborhoods that are not like Soyapango, that are perhaps middle-class neighborhoods, and you don't see the same type of behavior. And I think it goes back to last year's decision by the Salvadoran government not to prosecute police officers who shoot and kill allegedly in self-defense.
Yeah, I mean, as I think about African-American communities here in the U.S., I think about communities of kids in Soyapango. I mean, you met two young ladies named Lucy and Sophia. There they are in this neighborhood. What'd they tell you what it's like to live there, especially in this police crackdown?
So these two girls, they told me about how they've had to change everything about how they go about their days. You know, walking to and from school, being catcalled or sexually harassed by the police. Now, you know, their family members are walking them to and from school. They also echoed the sentiment that we're more scared of the police because they don't get in trouble.
Yeah.
They can do whatever they want to us.
Susan, you've been on The World several times and talked about your youth involvement in a street gang. I know that's far behind you, but it's probably given you a lot of insight into the relationship of the police to gangs, how to create a different sort of dynamic. What occurs to you?
What occurs to me is a comparison of what's happening with the police here in the United States. Since Ferguson, there's been a lot of talk about implicit bias and how difficult it is to overcome that. You can't just send someone to a cultural sensitivity class and undo years and years of indoctrination. You can't erase their thoughts and feelings and values that they have a specific class or a specific racial or ethnic group. And so I think the same holds true with law enforcement in El Salvador. They have also been indoctrinated to hold these strong beliefs about young people that live in poor communities. So they also feel justified that they have to protect themselves.
These young women you met in Soyapango, what did you learn about their dreams and aspirations? I mean, how do they see their futures with all this stuff going on around them?
The youngest girls, the youngest was 12, and there were a couple of 14-year-olds and a 15-year-old. They still had dreams that were very much linked to staying in El Salvador. Here are these young women who were asking for so little to be able to set up a small business in their home, to be able to have access to education, to be able to really learn the necessary steps to become an entrepreneur or to do other things. And I thought about how is it that we can link the Salvadoran diaspora primarily, which is over 2 million strong here in the U.S., and young women like these who had these dreams and they knew sort of what the steps were, but they just didn't have access to them. And I see a ray of hope there, because what these girls and these young women need is not a big ask. It wouldn't require, you know, an entire political campaign, you know, to make it happen.
Salvadoran American Susan Cruz, always good to have you on the program. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for letting these young women voice their concerns.